Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
The US Secretary of State Marco Rubio has said America is troubled by the humanitarian situation in Gaza. His calls, comments come amid calls for urgent international action to get aid to civilians and fresh warnings that nearly 500,000 people there, one in five of the population, now face catastrophic hunger. For more, I'm joined by James Elder, spokesperson for UNICEF. Good morning to you.
Claire, hi there.
We have been hearing such harrowing reports this week about the deteriorating humanitarian conditions in Gaza. The World Health Organization warning that the blockade of aid, Israel's blockade of aid, will have a lasting impact on an entire generation. What are your teams telling you about what is happening now?
Yeah, and that's spot on too. I mean, well, what's happening now, we have levels of starvation, we have the risk of famine again, remembering that there are hundreds of trucks across a border, there are people in comfortable restaurants 30 miles away. But yeah, long-term damage lasts a lifetime. It's cognitive decline, it's poor health, it's a whole generation, and it's permanent. But right now, what's happening is levels of starvation. That's not a natural disaster. It's inflicted. So, you know, and it's a cruel process. It's where the body eats first its fat, then its muscle. And if you're looking at a child, they grow cold, they grow emotionally numb, they stop crying, and that is your moment where you start to then see death. And so somehow, you know, a blockade, more than 2 months. And I'm talking to colleagues this morning on the ground, and they're hearing what they think are bunker bombs, relentless tank fire, and more than 2 months of not a single drop of water, Claire. It's, look, blockades, bombings, children starving. Somehow this has been normalised. So we are at the most critical point for Gaza, and we've said that before, but somehow it eclipses it. But right now, yes, if we're looking at potentially a ground offensive, this is the moment that every person in Gaza who is still alive has absolutely feared.
I was reading during the week the BBC were speaking to medical staff who themselves are struggling to find food now. They're surviving, they said, on one bowl of rice a day, trying to treat children and pregnant women who are coming to them who are malnourished. I mean, that is a relatively new situation, isn't it, where the aid workers don't have enough to eat.
Yeah, absolutely. But I hear it. I know full well of my colleagues on the ground, and I've seen it myself when whenever I've had four missions there, you know, colleagues lose significant weight. Everyone is impacted by that. And you've got to go back just a step to the ceasefire. Ceasefires that do everything. Ceasefire, of course, means children aren't bombed when they sleep. Ceasefire meant hostages go home, Claire. More than 150 hostages went home during negotiations. Less than 10 in military means. And that ceasefire also meant a huge improvement in nutrition for UNICEF. That's a focus on girls and boys, and that's because there was food in the market. UNICEF got a chance to repair those water systems. Those healthcare services could function safely, and they had drugs. But that ceasefire, which gave hope, it's gone. Food, water, medicines, as you say, nutrition, everything for a child or an aid worker or a doctor to survive for has gone. The only thing entering Gaza for almost two and a half months now is bombs. I mean, 2 days ago, Claire, I spoke. I speak almost every day to someone. I was speaking to a mother. She talked about not now feeding her children for 2 days. Again, we have all the food Gaza needs on the border. And the line that really stuck with me, Claire, that she spoke about looking in her children's eyes, and she wasn't sure if she was seeing fear from the bombing or now it was fear from the hunger. I've never heard a mother kind of have to try to reconcile what she's seeing.
And then this plan that the Israelis say they have to use private providers to bring the food in. Now, they say they'll be ready to go with that in 2 weeks, but the UN doesn't agree that that should go, that that's the way to do it, and that's the right way to get food in. They say they have this organisation called the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation ready to go. What's your own view of that and UNICEF's view?
Yeah, it's very clear. There's nothing subjective here. This is an objective assessment from the organisations who deliver aid in crisis zones across the world in dozens of scenarios and have done since World War II. So you can't force a population into an area that's not demilitarised, and nowhere is demilitarised. Only a ceasefire does that. You can't expect the injured, and there's a lot of injured in Gaza, to go to a few collection points. You can't expect children. You can't expect pregnant women. And we're talking about a handful handful of collection points versus the 400 the UN had. We're also talking about, you know, just food at the moment, and food as admitted by this modality that doesn't cover all the people. We're not talking drugs. We're not talking incubators. We're not talking support for pregnant women. So the vulnerable, the elderly, those with disabilities, the wounded can't get there. There's no guarantee at all for those people moving there that they won't be targeted. And that's happened a lot for people, whether it's deliberate or not. A lot of people moving in Gaza get killed as they are moving. So the risk of injury and death increases. The ability to deliver aid decreases. And amidst it all, Claire, there's such a simple alternative. Lift the blockade, let humanitarians deliver aid, save lives, as they have been doing in Gaza, as was so clear over those two-month period earlier this year.
You must feel like you're screaming into the void, because you've got all of this food and aid waiting there to come in. And, you know, I'm struck by what you said at the beginning, that less than 30 miles away, people are eating in luxury restaurants while this is happening in Gaza.
Yes, this is a particularly dark time, and as you allude to, what should shock the world at times barely registers. I'm lucky enough that I'm in touch with people on the ground in Gaza every single day, and always over a year and a half later, they would still just share stories of what they're doing, and I would do the same. And there was, it was often difficult, and you'd hear bombs, or sometimes you'd hear a child cry, but there was this amazing sense of resolve. They didn't really want to talk about their scenario. The last month or two, I have never heard such a level of desperation in the voices of people, who are volunteers in hospitals, of doctors, of aid workers, of just, you know, mums and dads of people I've met. There is a level of fear that I just wish that handful of people who had power to end this would hear, because at the same time, we know that the only way to end this, as we've seen in every conflict like this, the only way is through negotiations. My executive director said almost a year and a half ago, peace in the Middle East will not be achieved by bombing Gaza and killing so many children. That holds true. That is an historical truth. And yet here we are.
Let's talk about the Americans for a moment. The US Secretary of State Marco Rubio has said the US is troubled by the humanitarian situation in Gaza. He wants Hamas, has called on Hamas again to release the hostages and surrender, saying there will be no peace while that group exists. But on the aid front, what more can the United States do to get that aid that's waiting on the border to the people who need it?
Yeah, I mean, we have to be very clear on the hostages. We should never overlook it. It's abhorrent they were ever taken. And I hear that from so many people on the ground in Gaza as well. Everyday people are appalled by that, you know, mums, dads, grandparents, and they're still there somewhere. But as I said earlier, the simple truth is that hostages go home during ceasefires, more than 150, less than 10 during this murderous military campaign. So right now, children and hostages are paying the highest price. So, yeah, we should be concerned. We should be appalled by the inaction and the endless delays. The suffering is not complicated, and the solutions are not complex. But as everyone speaks, literally as I'm seeing messages pop in as you and I speak about the increasing of tanks apparently going from the north into the south. So the reality is that those who have the power, Claire, and it's always been the same, have the ability to stop this, have the ability to add a layer of sanity to this conflict, decency to the mums and dads and women on the ground, and to stop it and to get the hostages home and to get the aid flowing in.
There was this fear that as soon as Donald Trump left the Middle East, that there would be an uptick in the Israeli attacks. But we saw on Tuesday night that there was a huge bombing. Then we had that order for people to leave the Rimmel neighbourhood of Gaza. So what's your sense of it? This huge operation that has been promised from Israel, do you think it's already begun?
Look, I don't have any military expertise. I can only link to what people on the ground are telling me. And there has been a massive escalation now. This is the most severe 48 hours. Whether it's that in terms of bombardments, that would need to know how many bombs have dropped. But certainly in terms of numbers of children killed for UNICEF, there's absolutely no doubt, since those first days after the ceasefire broke. So the evidence on the ground, the evidence, again, of what women and children are enduring right now is very clear, that speaks to a heavy escalation of fighting. Well, fighting. I'm not sure that we really should call it fighting in that sense. I don't think that war this should really be called a war. I mean, for the most simple reason, Claire, that war has rules, and this is the destruction of a society, brick by brick, child by child.
We've spoken in the past on the program to many people who have gone in to work for a period of time, a number of weeks, and then come back out again. Whether that's medics or aid workers and so on. Can you get people in on that basis now? Have things changed in that regard because the blockade is in place?
United Nations does, UNICEF does. We're very much an organisation, the UN, that this is a stay and deliver mandate. That's the same no matter where we are, whether it's, you know, Yemen, Sudan, Gaza, it is stay and deliver. It's a lesser amount now than previously, and it is the most dangerous operating theatre for aid workers, doctors to work with. It was journalists. Look at the number of Palestinian journalists killed, without a shadow of a doubt. I think you can start to combine multiple conflicts over the last 20 years, put them together, and Gaza is more lethal. You know, those people go through night after night. And when I talk to doctors, you talk of doctors living in tents now, having been displaced three or four times, starting their day at 5 in the morning, having heard heavy bombardment at 2 a.m. So heavy bombardment, Claire, at 2 a.m., start their day at 5 by looking for water and so on and for any food for their family, and then go to the hospital and do surgery in the most basic scenarios with children with, you know, shrapnel wounds, bullet wounds for the next 12 hours. Repeat, repeat, repeat.
I'm just conscious that, you know, you're going back now to your life after our conversation, where you will have people pleading with you for food, for their most basic needs, for their children. I mean, what is your message today? What is it that you want us to hear?
It's a ceasefire, and it always has been. Now, of course, it's almost, but that was the message in the entirety of 2024, and it never happened, and it never looked like happening, to be perfectly candid. At the most basic, it is end the blockade. I can't believe how tired people have become about hearing about international humanitarian law. You cannot starve a population, okay? The decision of that will be made. You simply cannot feed people, get water in there, get medicines, get incubators. At the most basic levels, it's staggering that we are talking about this, but that's the most basic. End the blockade, allow mums, women, children, food and water.
James, thank you so much for speaking to us. James Elder there from UNICEF.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.